is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We've got pro days, we've got win totals, we've got news and new rules trickling out of the NFL owners' meetings. This is a league that has no idea what an offseason is, and neither do we as we welcome you into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. How are we doing today, Michael?
Offseason? What are you talking about, Stormy? Off-season. There is no off in that season. It's all just one, well, maybe July. Maybe we'll have a little bit in June, 15th to the 15th, right? But, God, we love it. Isn't it great? I mean, isn't it just tremendous that we're able to get excited about some guy running a 40 down in Baton Rouge, and he ran 4.35, and, of course, naturally, Elliott, he wants to dismiss it as not counting as much as the combine because he's not going to be a Colt, you know? He's going to be on another team. So I love it. It's so good. It's good to be here, you know? Excited for the Final Four this week, the tournament this weekend, excited for the women. I mean, there's a lot going on, Stormy.
Yes, no question. And to set the table, as you did there, for the rest of the show, while this is an NFL focus, we got lots of college hoops that we're going to get into as well with the Sweet 16 kicking off tomorrow. We got Adam Burke joining us in a half an hour, VSiN managing editor. Get some of his game previews. Former head coach turned college basketball analyst now at ESPN, Tom Crean, is going to stop by an hour or two. And our good friend and handicapper, Harry Gagnon of the Against All Odds podcast, also coming up in hour two. But let's start with that pro day you mentioned in Baton Rouge, because we're less than a month away from the first round of the draft coming up on April 25th. Pro days all over the place. We got LSU today, North Carolina, and Washington tomorrow. So while we get to see Jaden Daniels today, we get Drake May and Michael Penix Jr. coming up very soon. J.J. McCarthy had the best pro day ever, though, for a quarterback. So we got a high bar here. Before we get to Malik Nabers, I want to say Jaden Daniels, since the big question mark about him coming in was the measurements. He's got that slimmer frame. He officially weighed in and measured in 6'3", 210 pounds, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, look, the smallest quarterback in the draft last year was the one who didn't get hurt. So all this really comes down to who's quick-minded, what do you do with the ball, and obviously he's going to have to protect himself, there's no question. But, you know, at 6'3", 210, and he's an older player, so you feel like there will be a little bit more girth and added to it. You know, I think he certainly has the tape to back it up. I do believe, Stormy, when you keep watching these quarterbacks play, there is a gap, right? There's a gap between Williams, and then there's a gap between Daniels, and then May, and then Nix and McCarthy. And I think you got to figure out those gaps, and you have to figure out as an executive, you know, where does this guy fit as it relates to the other players in the league? Because, you know, when you draft Kenny Pickett, you obviously said, you know, you're saying when you turn that card in, he's going to be in the top 10 of his position because that's what you need him to be. And when he isn't, it's going to be a blown pick. And like I've mentioned, you know, there have been 66 quarterbacks drafted in the first round, not counting last year, and 37 of them have been failures. So the success rate isn't good.
Yeah, and I did think that was interesting what you mentioned in terms of frame, because you're dead on. Bryce Young last year ended up being the only rookie quarterback that played the entire season, and that's despite him being the second most sacked quarterback in all of the NFL behind that bad offensive line. So you're looking at not just that, but a lot of other factors here. What are you most interested to see coming out of Jaden Daniels' pro day today, aside from the measurements?
Well, I just think how he handles himself. You know, his tape is really good. Now, he's throwing the ball to really good receivers. We get that, right? And so the offense was good. The defense couldn't play. But I think, you know, one of the things you knew about him at Arizona State was when he was well-coached at Arizona State, I think before he transferred, he was good. It's interesting. This draft is so funny, Stormy, because three of the top six quarterbacks all transferred. Three of the top six quarterbacks in this draft all were successful before they transferred. Three of the top six quarterbacks transferred, okay, after they had bad years. Now, Caleb Williams transferred as well, but he was good at Oklahoma and he was good at USC. So that's four that transferred. But for me, I think the ones that what we've learned about Nix, what we've learned about Daniels, and what we've learned about Penix is when they had the right coaching, they really look good. When they weren't coached very well, they did not look good. Is that a reflection on them as players, or is that a reflection of them as their coach? And I think the latter, because when Daniels comes to LSU, right? Yeah. He was sensational. When Nix goes to Oregon, he was really good. And when Penix reunited with Caden DeBoard, he became all of a sudden really good.
Yeah, with Jaden Daniels specifically, it is interesting just going through his collegiate career. It's like every single year he did improve and get better as he went, capped, of course, by a 50-total touchdown season and a Heisman Trophy there. But it reminded me kind of Jalen Hurts, maybe not this past season, obviously, but every other year from college into those first couple seasons in the NFL, like he was just consistently improving. So I wonder if that's something that we continue to see from a guy like Jaden Daniels. Yeah. Something you pointed out, though, is that at this pro day, he's going to be throwing to two of the best wide receivers in this draft, and Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas. Of the 40 touchdown passes he threw this year, 31 of them went to those two guys. Drake May's not going to have that. And so I do want to make that distinction with Drake May, because he's getting knocked so much right now for a number of different things, but he is 2 years younger, so the development and experience is less. He doesn't have the weapons and the talent around him that some of these other quarterbacks have had. And Drake May is somebody that I'm very eager and excited to see what he's like as a pro. So I wonder how much you measure the on-field production and tape and what we've seen versus the projection. Like, how challenging is that as a scout to figure out what's the most valuable?
Well, you've got to project him forward. Because remember, let's go back, Joe Burrow. You know, he didn't even get a red jersey for a quarterback from Urban Meyer when he was at Ohio State. They hit him because he was the scout team quarterback, and they hit him no matter what happened. And he was never had a chance to compete. Dwayne Haskins was the starter because he was a five-star, and Burrow had a transfer. And when Burrow transferred to LSU, nobody was thinking he was going to be the first pick overall, or Joey Burrow, or like Joe Montana. So I think you've got to allow for some of this, right? And I think your point about May is well taken. He's 6'4", he's 230 pounds, he's going to get bigger, he's going to get stronger, and he's a great kid. And he's going to improve, and you've got to measure the improvement. You've got to ask yourself on a continual basis, if we take this kid, what's the downside? What's the worst he's going to be? And what's the best he's going to be, right? And let's not live in dreamland. Let's live in reality. If we get this kid to do X, Y, and Z, he'll be a really good player and we can win with him. If we don't, where are we left with? Those are the questions that you have to constantly ask yourself. And what's going on now is everybody's just slotting him in. Well, he's going to, you know, they're going to go here. And you and I both know from what we talked about yesterday, the odds are going to continue to move around based on lack of information, if nothing else, because it's not reliable.
Racing sit right now, Jaden Daniels, a minus 125 odds on favorite to go number 2 overall. Drake May, minus 125 to go number 3. We'll get back to the quarterbacks in a little bit in our next segment. But for now, let's head out to some of the sound that has come out of Orlando in the NFL owners meetings. Commissioner Roger Goodell had to answer some questions about some of the new rules and tweaks heading into 2024. Here's Goodell on the new kickoff model.
I think we're still going to have to tinker with it. I think it's one of those things when you get it in play, you look at things and you will reevaluate that as the season's going on. And if it's appropriate to make changes in the future, we will. So I think it'll be a big improvement. I think it will bring the play back into, a relevant play, an important play, and an exciting play. And I think we can do it where the injury rate hopefully will drop.
Hearing that and having 24 hours now to sit on the change, Michael, has your opinion changed or altered at all since yesterday?
No, actually, it's gotten stronger because I keep thinking about all the times you might want to employ, and maybe it's twice a year at the most, an onside kick. Maybe you want to catch somebody off guard, and you've removed that. Now that's no longer in the strategy of the game. Maybe you're getting ready to go play a team that you're David and they're Goliath, and you want to be able to find a way to win the game with an onside kick or something that happens. And, you know, the rules have prohibited you from doing that. So I don't really like it. And the more I watch the tape of it, you know, I'm not sure that it's going to cut down on injuries. There's still, you know, there's still violent collisions in a 5-yard area. Let's be clear. And most of the time when you're sprinting to cover a kick, you're under control. You're under control. They've eliminated the blindside block, which was important. That was a lot of injuries and concussions. But to me, I'm not sure. I think it's going to be too much of a cluster. I appreciate what Goodell said about we're going to look it over, because I think it could be too gimmicky for me. And when you remove something that could help a team get back into the game, then I think, you know, now all of a sudden, are we really the NFL or are we another league trying to get noticed?
Yeah, and I think that that's great that he said that it's going to be continued to be tweaked. Just because this is what the rule is that they have set now, they are leaving themselves opportunities to adjust and to change that as necessary. Dan Campbell had an interesting comment saying that this new kickoff has a lot of people spooked because of the unknown of it, but that excites him that he and his special teams coordinator Dave Phipp have already been studying the XFL version, discussing what types of body types and athletes that they should be finding that'll be useful in that new scheme. Speaking to that, on the day that they changed the kickoff, the Steelers signed Cordarrelle Patterson to a 2-year, $6 million deal. He's returned 9 kicks for touchdowns, 3 times as many kick return touchdowns as any player since entering the league in 2013. What did you make of that signing?
I thought Patterson was hurt last year, right? And I think Patterson's one of those guys like LaVisca Chenault down at Carolina who hasn't signed with anybody who's hard to tackle. I think anytime you can add a guy to your team that's hard to tackle, you should do it. And I'm surprised he got this good of a deal from them because this is a little late to get almost a $4 million a year deal or over $4 million a year. But I like it. I think it's a great change of pace. They've got Warren. They got Harris. Now they've got Patterson. They can move Patterson around. Look, this Steeler team, if they get that offensive line to continue to play well, this Steeler team is going to be much better. And we know this too, Stormy. When T.J. Watt's on the field for them, they're a much better defense.
Yeah, and Patrick Queen, a great addition to the defense as well. The Steelers have only had one kickoff run back for a touchdown since 2017. It's an area they've struggled in, so hopefully Patterson can be an upgrade as he reunites with his former coach on the offense in Arthur Smith. We're going to hit the break. When we return, Michael and I continue to talk quarterbacks and the value or lack thereof when it comes to mock drafts.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The Lombardi Line coming to you from coast to coast. Michael's out there at his office in Jersey. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, live from Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. Now, we mentioned before the break the Cordarrelle Patterson signing in Pittsburgh, Michael, which you said you liked. Another deal got inked yesterday as well. Former Bills All-Pro corner Tre'Davious White intends to sign a 1-year, $8.5 million deal with the Rams, max value up to 10. What was your initial thought when you heard?
Well, you know, we hope he's healthy. And I think that's the big thing. Whenever you sign a guy coming off an ACL that relies on, you know, speed and vertical play, you're always a little hesitant to sign off on it. But obviously the Rams feel like he can come back. They're going to need this because, let's face it, as good as the Rams play defensively, they can't play the same way because they don't have a guy on the field any longer that dominates double coverage, that makes the offense have to slide the protection. You're not going to replace Aaron Donald. But, you know, you're trying to improve your overall team defense. I think a lot of this is wait and see, especially when you sign someone coming off a major injury like White had.
29 years old, tore his ACL in 2021, returned for 6 regular season games and 2 playoff games in 2022 before tearing his right Achilles this past season, 4 games in. So an injury he continues to rehab right now. But as you mentioned, you know, very talented guy when healthy. Also, just while we wrap up the Rams here, Les Snead said that Stetson Bennett is set to return for offseason workouts, Michael. Back. So still don't know where he was, where he's been, but he's coming back.
Yeah, nobody knows. Nobody knows. But I think this, Stormy, I think the Rams could be a sleeper team to pick a quarterback. You know,
really?
Because this is the perfect time for them to do it, right? Stafford's still playing well. Can he keep going for 2 more years? Maybe. But if they could grab somebody they like, and maybe it's not going to be in the first round, but I got a feeling they're going to draft one because they know they need a young quarterback. Garoppolo's going to be suspended for the first 2 games of the year. They're going to need somebody to fill in. Is it Stetson Bennett? I don't know if they could trust Stetson Bennett the way he went off the rails last year.
As far as the first round goes, taking somebody on the D-line is a -125 favorite at DraftKings, 25-1 for them to have a quarterback with their first pick in this year's draft. So if you think that's a reality, hot odds there in the QB room for Los Angeles. And because we're talking quarterbacks in general, Michael, you have an article up on VSiN.com right now called Drafting Quarterbacks is a Risky Business, which I think is something we all can agree to be true. But why is that the case? Why is it so challenging to get the most important position on the field right for these teams?
because there's so many variables in it, right? And we're and you would think now, you know, Stormy, before you were born and I got into scouting, and it was a wishbone college era, and it was the option, and nobody threw the football, and Troy Aikman transferred before transferring was popular, because he went to Oklahoma and was disappointed they didn't change the offense from the veer into a passing game, like Barry Switzer was going to do that, right? So he transfers to UCLA, and it has to sit out a year and all that. So, you know, then when we were drafting quarterbacks, the players weren't really ready, or they weren't throwing. They didn't have summer leagues. They didn't have seven-on-seven camps. They didn't have all the passing that we see today. And yet the development is still takes forever, because the reality of it is you're trying to find somebody to understand what his strengths are, what his weaknesses, and how that fits within the framework of the offense that you're asking him to do, and how well. Just look at Mac Jones, coached by Josh McDaniels that one year, played well, still turned the ball over too much. McDaniels couldn't fix everything in one year, but he loses McDaniels, and all of a sudden now he's down in a scrap heap. Let's look at Penix. You know, he loses Kalen DeBoer to Fresno State, and all of a sudden Indiana's not the same, and he's not the same. So it's the marriage of the draft with the coach is really important, and that's hard to get connectivity to. And that's why I think it's difficult, because no one asks the question, what are we going to run if we draft him? Who are we going to become if we select J.J. McCarthy in the first round? What type of offense do we need to run, and what kind of team are we going to have? Everybody just says, well, he's going to make us better. Well, that doesn't work, because as we know, 37 of the last 66 quarterbacks picked in the first round are not playing on teams.
When we hear all the time, like, a team's fallen in love with this guy, or this player is rising, like, those are things that we hear all the time when it comes to the draft. From a scouting perspective, what are things that you can do to avoid certain pitfalls with players at the quarterback position? Like, how tough is that to identify in such a short amount of time as you try to decide the future for your franchise?
Well, I think you really got to connect with the player, and you got to feel like the player connects with his teammates there. All the evidence is really there. The best thing to do is to watch the flow of the game. Watch the game tape, right? You know, when you watch McCarthy, you know, he was selfless. You know, he didn't throw a pass in Penn State in the second half, Ohio State. You know, none of the games that they won, they relied on McCarthy to win, right? And so there's always like, well, why didn't they do that? You know, so I think to me, can he connect with his teammates? Can he make key plays at key times? One of the things that makes McCarthy so good is he's really good on third down. He's been very good at executing on third down. And so that gives you a sense that, okay, he's got this. So it's a lot of really understanding what goes into what you need to have to be successful. And then you got to have enough skill set. Look, you know, Bo Nix at Auburn was not good, but he goes to Oregon, he's really good. When you're watching Bo, let's say Bo Nix and Brock Purdy. When Brock Purdy was coming out of Iowa State, everybody said he was a good player. He's just too small, doesn't have enough arm, right? But he understands how to play the game. True, doesn't get picked until the last pick in the seventh round. Well, Bo Nix is a bigger version of Purdy, right? He's a bigger version. He has athleticism. You know, he understands how to play the game. And when he's in a system that highlights him, he can play effectively. Will he be a top 10 player at his position? I think a lot of that's going to depend on who drafts them, right? Can they highlight a skill set? I think, again, that depends on how they get drafted. So it's easy for the mockers to say, I don't like this guy, because they're not putting him into a system. And so that's why we hear the verbiage, they're moving up, because the system is not attached to any player. And once you attach a system that he fits, like watching Bo Nix yesterday, I was watching, like, he fits what Sean Payton wants to do offensively. I could see it in the tape. You know, is he a top five player at his position? I doubt it. If I were grading him, could I say he's a potential starter? Without a doubt. Could I say he's a day one starter? Probably hard for me to do that. And that's how you have to look at it.
Bo Nix, one of my favorite players, honestly, getting a chance to cover him. Really, really great person, great kid. Finishes his career as the NCAA all-time leading passer. A couple great quotes, Michael. And I don't know how you are as a writer, how you feel about people reading your own words back to you, but I'm going to do that here real quickly. A couple great ones from the article, again, up at VSiN.com right now. When there's a huge need at a position, a team's eyes get big. They act as if they found gold in the Sierra Mountains, and all they have to do is excavate their fortune. As in 1849, turning dirt into gold is harder than it looks, and today, turning a college quarterback into a star is hard. NFL teams are blinded by their dream of finally solving the problem. Like, that is so, just so pointed and so right on with what's happening in the NFL.
Yeah. It's fool's gold. Just like, you know, as I wrote later, you know, the only people that made out on the gold rush were the people selling picks and shovels. You know,
yep.
Everybody else was, you know, everybody else failed. So, like, we just have a sense. We want it to be good. We want it to be good. And, you know, and I go back to it. There's a great scene in The Hunt for Bin Laden when the Jessica Chastain character says to the other guy, when she's trying to prove something to him, and he says, "You're telling me you want this to be true." "Yes, I want this to be true." We all want it to be true that this guy's going to be a good player. And so when we feel like we've had enough data to say that, we stop and we don't look beyond and we don't ask the second questions that we have to ask.
And in this year's draft, especially because of the volume of quarterbacks that are considered to be really high caliber, high potential players, there's more intrigue in this draft at the position than most. And with that, we talked about it a lot yesterday, the odds movement on J.J. McCarthy specifically, who goes from 18-1 2 days ago to now sitting plus 275 to be the number two overall selection in the draft, based on some comments that we hear, the rave reviews from his former head coach in Jim Harbaugh, the comments from Tom Pelissero about, you know, people that know Adam Peters really well and what he might think and what he might want to do. ESPN Commanders reporter John Keim tweeted, "Dan Quinn said he's just now getting into draft work. Said if anyone thinks they know it, the Commanders are going to do it too. They don't really know." Quote, "Adam and I aren't there yet." That quote coming from Dan Quinn. Right now, that quarterback room is Marcus Mariota and Jake Fromm. We know that they're going to pick a quarterback, but who will it be? Can you glean anything from that comment from Dan Quinn, or is it just lying season all over again?
Well, I mean, like, how can that not be? I mean, if you're the head coach of the team, I want to know what you want at quarterback. I want you to, in the interview, to tell me exactly what you think wins in the league. That's part of getting the job. So just because you two haven't watched tape together doesn't mean you don't know that. Like, I want to be able to go scout and say, this is the player that fits what we want to do perfectly. And you hired Cliff Kingsbury. So you've got two people that now need to answer. And how is this going to affect? This is why we have such a breakdown in trying to evaluate quarterbacks. Exactly what Quinn said is the wrong methodology. Like, we're trying to find something that builds our program around the skill set that we want. That's the most important thing. And yet we're talking about, we haven't talked about it. Why? That there's a lack of communication. Aren't you in the same building together?
Yeah. Commanders currently in that number two overall spot. Jane Daniels, minus 125 favorite to go to. Drake May, plus 150. And McCarthy, as I referenced, plus 275. We're going to hit the commercial real quickly here on the other side of the break. The Sweet 16 is growing less sweet by the day for this team. Why VSiN's Adam Burke says, fade away. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start betting smarter with the VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up today. You'll get your first year for $199 instead of the usual $240 price. And all you need to do is use our promo code Lombardi. That gets you VSiN Pro access to everything we do for an entire year, which includes the daily best bets, the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits showing you where the money and bets are moving for each game, betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, plus access to our March Madness betting hub with picks for each and every game and round of the tournament as it progresses. Remember, use that promo code Lombardi. Get your first year of VSiN Pro for $199. Sign up today at vsin.com/subscribe alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Speaking of that March Madness hub, somebody who has been integral to the success and getting write-ups out for each and every game is Adam Burke, who joins us now via the Progressive Guest Line, VSiN Managing Editor. Action getting underway tomorrow with the Sweet 16. Also tomorrow, opening day in Major League Baseball. And Adam is our resident baseball expert. Got a new podcast coming out beginning tomorrow, Double Play, a baseball betting podcast. What can you tell us about the new pod? And, I mean, rough day for baseball to get started. Sweet 16, that's a lot of action going on, my friend.
Yeah, it's a rough day. It's been a rough month trying to get all this MLB stuff put together while being overshadowed by college basketball. But I am very excited about the Double Play Baseball Betting podcast that I'll be doing with our own Dustin Sweetelson. That'll be a DraftKings podcast. So looking forward to that. You know, I think there'll be a little bit of humor on that show, some good baseball takes. we'll mix in a little bit of betting as well. But, you know, hey, opening day and a new beginning with a podcast here. So definitely looking forward to that.
When you did an amazing job. I don't know how you do all the writing that you've been doing, but it's remarkable. As you go over the landscape of Major League Baseball and you look back, you do all the writing. And sometimes for me, writing ends up leads me to a thought I wasn't going to have. Is there a team that after you wrote up all of the teams that you thought maybe this could be a team that I've under-evaluated?
Yeah, for sure. There are always teams that I feel like, you know, my initial thoughts were to either be higher or lower on that team. And I think that, you know, a team that maybe I underevaluate a little bit actually is the Milwaukee Brewers, where I don't think their rotation will be all that good. I'm not betting over their season win total or anything like that. But, you know, I kind of looked at this team and I thought, okay, I think they're going to be bad all the way around. You know, they're missing Devin Williams. He'll miss the first 3 months of the year out of the bullpen. So that's a group that's a little bit shaky. But I started to really like the offense as I started looking at that team, to where maybe early on they could be a little bit of a surprise team because they've got some guys that I think are kind of growing up a little bit within the organization, some guys that are maybe in line for some positive regression that I didn't really realize coming out of last year. So I think I'll be betting some overs with the Milwaukee Brewers. Mm-hmm. Not a team where I'll bet, you know, season-long futures or props on them, but just a team that I think maybe their offense could be a little bit undervalued early on in the season. And on the flip side, I think a team like Seattle is a team that I'm looking to fade, a team that I bet a season win total under on. Of course, now, you know, Brian Wu winds up on the injured list, but that's a team that kind of traded out some power and some strikeouts for some more contact-oriented guys, but guys that are hurt a lot. So, you know, the Mariners are a team, you just look at them, you think, oh, they've got a, you know, top five caliber rotation, but I found some other things that were concerning for me that made them a season win total under bet. So, yeah, to your point, Michael, doing the research, doing the writing very much helps me get in the mindset for the season and see some things that maybe I missed.
One last thing before we get to college hoops, because, Adam, we can't talk baseball and betting without talking about Shohei Ohtani and everything that's unfolded over the course of the last week and the scandal that's been going on with his interpreter. He spoke to media with a prepared statement a couple days ago. What have your big evaluation been of this whole scenario and how things play out? It feels like there's still a lot of unknowns.
Yeah, there are a lot of unknowns. I mean, I don't know if there will be any material baseball impact with the Dodgers here. You know, I don't think there will be any supplemental discipline anytime soon for Ohtani, if there even is any. Certainly the messaging, you know, the way that his camp has handled things has been questionable, you know, to say the least. But you know, something I think has been interesting is you've had a lot of MLB players coming out now, guys that played over in Korea, guys that played over in Japan. And they're like, look, when there's a language barrier, you rely on your interpreter for everything. And you hope that they are, you know, properly expressing the things that you're saying. You hope that they're, you know, taking care of you the way that they kind of should when you're in an environment that's a little bit different for you. So, you know, in seeing some of that from guys that have played in the KBO and also played over in Japan, you know, it kind of made me sort of think, okay, you know, people rushing to judgments about this really have no experience with this situation. And players who do have experience with it are coming out and talking about how difficult it is and how much trust that you have to put in that person, and almost to some degree blind trust. So I don't know. I don't know all the inner workings of the situation. I'm just kind of focusing on the baseball side of it. And I don't think it will be a big distraction for the Dodgers. And I don't think it will take Ohtani away from the team anytime soon, if at all.
And as we shift into basketball here now, UNLV still going in the NIT, still moving along. You like them today in their game?
I like the under in tonight's game. I mean, look, I think UNLV is live. This line has jumped up to 5.5. I think a lot of it has to do with the travel situation for the Rebels, where they play on the road at Princeton. They come back home, beat Boston College. Now they're back out on the East Coast again to take on Seton Hall. I could see them covering this number, but it's the under that I like here. You know, I think some of these totals are still a little bit inflated in some of these postseason tournament games, where early on, there's not a lot of defense. There's a lot of guys that are out there running around, taking shots, trying to pad stats, stuff like that. When you get to the quarterfinals, the semifinals, the championship, you know, to me, that's where you start thinking, okay, we can go home with some hardware. You know, there's only going to be one team in the NCAA tournament that finishes the season with a win. Same thing with the NIT, same thing with the CBI and the CIT. So at this point, these teams want to win. I mean, that wasn't the case with Fairfield last night because they had some guys enter the transfer portal before the game. But these teams want to win, and they're going to play better defense, I think, as the importance of these games kind of goes forward. So to me, I like the under tonight. I think UNLV has some positive regression coming defensively in terms of the three-point rate they've allowed here in this tournament so far. And Seton Hall's not a team that shoots a lot of threes. and they're not very good at doing it. And, you know, Seton Hall is a very good team on the interior defensively. I think points are tough to come by tonight. I bet it under 141.5. I see it's 142.5 now, so it's gone up a little bit. But I think the under is the play in that Seton Hall UNLV game.
That game tipping off at 4 Pacific, 7 Eastern on ESPN2. The NIT quarterfinals as they roll on. How about in the Sweet 16 getting underway tomorrow, as we referenced? Is there one game in particular that stood out from a betting perspective above the rest for you?
Yeah, I really like North Carolina. I think this is going to wind up being a popular play here against Alabama. But, you know, I mean, for Alabama, like, I mean, they've had a pretty nice path to this point here. They played a couple of double-digit seeds. They play Charleston. They play Grand Canyon. Now, to be fair, two very, very different styles of opponents. Charleston likes to run and gun. They like to shoot a lot. Grand Canyon, you know, they're a team that kind of lives with their defense. But I think this is a much more difficult game for Alabama because defensively they struggled a lot in the second half of the season. That was a big knock on them coming into the tournament. Now you get a North Carolina team that will not only run with you and be happy to do so, will not only score with you and be happy to do so, they're a much better defensive team than Alabama. I mean, they're a borderline top 10 team in adjusted defensive efficiency, top 15 team in effective field goal percentage. I just don't think this is a good matchup at all whatsoever for the Crimson Tide. I like North Carolina laying the number here in this game.
Adam, we had Tate Frazier on yesterday from the One Shining Pod, and he really is in love with Illinois' team, how they're playing right now. And, you know, he feels like Iowa State, even though they're one of the best teams remaining defensively, will be a challenge. They have the ability to beat Iowa State. What are your thoughts? I know you're not playing it, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I think this is a tough game for a variety of different reasons. I mean, first of all, we know Iowa State's a really, really good defensive team. We know that Illinois is good on offense. They like to bang. They like to be physical. We'll see if that's a problem for Iowa State. But for Iowa State, I mean, I've been skeptical of them, you know, here late in the season because they were so good at home. I mean, they had so much Hilton magic. They were an undefeated team at home. And I kind of came into the tournament thinking, okay, I'm a little bit worried about this team playing in all these neutral settings. Well, they've rattled off 5 wins in a row, almost all of them in dominant fashion. They've held opponents under a point per possession in all 5 of those games. They're playing at a remarkably high level right now. Is Illinois a better team than South Dakota State and Washington State? Absolutely. There's no question about that. The line certainly reflects that. I don't really want to fade this Iowa State team right now, but I know there were some people that really liked Illinois going into the Big Ten tournament. They were validated there, and I can understand why they would feel like Illinois, you know, has a good shot here in this game.
Adam, according to our own Steve Mackinnon, Sweet 16 double-digit favorite since 2001, are 18-2 straight up, but 6-14 against the spread, the lone double-digit favorite. UConn against my Aztecs in San Diego State, who the Huskies beat by 17 in the national championship last year. Do you think 11 is a number that the Huskies can continue to cover?
I think they can. I think it's a bet that I don't really want to make, though, because this is a game that will probably be played to 64, 65 possessions, and it takes a pretty high degree of efficiency on both ends of the floor to be able to cover a number like this in a game that will have a limited number of scoring opportunities. That being said, I mean, you know, UConn looks dominant again. I think this team is better than last year's team. Dan Hurley keeps playing the chip on our shoulder, you know, card because of the region that they got put into. San Diego State may just be running into a buzzsaw here, but 11 in a game played to 63, 64 possessions in all likelihood, that's just too rich of a number for me. That said, I have no interest in backing the Aztecs. Sorry, Stormy.
Yeah, it's all right. I don't disagree. Adam, appreciate your time. Thanks, pal.
Absolutely. Have a good one,
great
guys.
Great work, Adam.
Again, check out Double Play, a baseball betting podcast, out for the first time tomorrow. When we come back, we'll look at some NFL season-long win totals as our Gridiron Goldilocks series continues on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DK customers. You can earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager, up to $2,500 in bonus bets your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now and use our code Lombardi when you sign up. That'll earn you a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager right now. Alongside Mike Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you, it is time for Gridiron Goldilocks. If it's your first time watching the program, we're looking at some NFL season-long prop numbers, and Michael's going to gauge whether the number is too high, too low, or just right. And today, with some of these new NFL season win totals out, we're looking specifically at teams whose odds have them right around that 500 mark. So will this team have a winning season or a losing season, Michael? Let's start in the AFC. With the Los Angeles Chargers, Jim Harbaugh might be living in an RV right now, but oddsmakers have him to see this Chargers team nearly double their win total from a season ago. They had five. The number set here at 8.5. So will they get 9 or more? Michael, is this number set too high, too low, or just right for where you see Los Angeles in 2024?
I think it's too low. And if you listen to Harbaugh, and he is really doing his best Jim Rockford. I think he's always wanted to live in a trailer near the beach. And so he's in an RV near the beach. Not too bad, right? But, you know, he's not making $200 a day plus expenses, Stormy, I could tell you that. But the reality here is his team will be tough. And they'll win more close games than they did last year. And because of that toughness, I think this number at 8.5 is too low. They still have a blue chip quarterback. And what we do know about Harbaugh is he makes the quarterback play better. And if you can make Herbert play better, which is easy to do because he's talented, I think the rest of the team will play better. Plus, could you not love the fact he just echoes everything that I believed when he said offensive lineman? No. At the owners meeting, and he talked about the value of being the only position that doesn't rely on anybody else. He didn't talk about 27 receivers going in the first round. He talked about rebuilding the offensive line. I loved it.
I also loved the argument that, hey, sometimes defensive linemen will want to chime in there and say, yeah, but what about us? We don't need anybody else. Really? You wouldn't like your offense to have a nice 17-play drive, give you some time to rest? So it was a great argument all around. But to your point about the RV, who's got it better than Jim Harbaugh? I think his answer would
nobody.
Be nobody. How about the Jacksonville Jaguars? Last year, odds on favorite to win their division, had an 8-3 start to the season. They're tied with Miami and Kansas City for the second best record in the AFC. Half a game back from Baltimore. They win just one game the rest of the way down the stretch, and it was against Carolina to finish 9-8. They're set at their season win total set at 8.5 as well. Too high, too low, or just right.
I think this is probably just right, and I would lean towards the over here, right? I really would lean towards the over. I think they can get to 9 wins. They're going to be better defensively. I think there's no question about that. I think that's certainly going to help them, you know, as they go through. Ryan Nielsen, who they hired as their new defensive coordinator, will be an upgrade over Mike Caldwell. I think that's certainly going to help them. They've added to their defense. I think that will help them. But they're going to have to get Trevor Lawrence to play better. And the reason I'm not running to go the over is because I'm not sure they can get him to play better because he makes way too many mistakes at critical times.
First season, too, that Trevor Lawrence, you know, dealt with and battled through injuries. Again, 9-8 last season, and Doug Peterson did say Monday at the NFL owners meetings that the way that season ended, going 1-5 down the stretch, is a sting that has fueled him, and he hopes will fuel this team. We'll have to wait and see. Now, the Pittsburgh Steelers are next on our list, Michael, but do I really need to ask the question with this set at 8.5? Because I'm just going to say this. Elliot added to the tally, our Tomlin tracker. Mike Tomlin has never had a losing season, Michael. So is this automatically too low?
I mean, they're a better team this year than they were at any time last year. How is this 8.5? It's too low. There's no juice in either direction based on what I see, Stormy. Mm. You? I mean, you would think that, you know, like the Chargers on the over, there's juice there, right?
Yep.
I mean, if I were recommending the Chargers, I would say wait till it goes to 9 and play the over there, figuring they could get to 10 wins. Because right now at minus 160, not good. But the Steelers are minus 110 in both directions. That don't seem right to me.
Oh. I'm with you. We talked about... If TJ Watt is healthy on the defense, Patrick Queen, you add in there. You also think, of course, the big ticket item is the quarterback room, where you go from a team that had the fewest touchdown passes in each of the last 2 years in all of the National Football League, which is 25 the last 2 years. You upgrade that room with Russell Wilson, Justin Fields behind him. Like, a lot of things are just showing up. Steelers getting a 9-plus win season. So I am with you. I feel very comfortable with the minus 110 there. Let's keep it in what is a very challenging division, though. There is no secret there. The Browns had to go through 5 quarterbacks last season in a defense that was great at home, rough on the road. Is 8.5 too high, too low, or just right for them?
I think it's too low. I mean, they won last year with Joe Flacco. We think they'll be better defensively. They don't have very many draft picks, so they've done as much as they could do in the free agency. They've added Judy as another receiver to their arsenal. They count on Nick Chubb. Can he be healthy? They added Foreman to come back. And you know, he can play in that scheme perfectly. The offensive line, which lost both tackles for most of the season, or at least three quarters of the season, should be intact. So why not? You know, why not? Again, no juice on either side of this one. But for me, you know, I think that this team can improve on where they were, and going to 9 wins won't be an improvement. It'll be a disappointment, but it still would cash a ticket.
Colts had 9 wins last season, finished second in the AFC South. When it comes to their roster for 2024, GM Chris Ballard said, different is not always better. They really prioritized re-signing the free agents they currently had on their roster versus going out and getting other players. Their win total set at 8.5 with juice to the under despite coming off of a 9-win season. Do you think this is too high, too low, or just right?
Well, it kind of lends you to think that everybody's uncertain about Richardson, right? Mm. I mean, because this number, they had 9 wins with Gardner Minshew, and now we're going, and the under's more favorite here. Is it because the South is going to be that hard of a division? Tennessee, have they improved enough? You know, Jacksonville's still beatable. Look, the Colts had every chance to beat Houston at home. I mean, if Minshew makes the one throw over to the corner and the kid catches it, you know, Houston's not going to make the playoffs. So it seems low to me. It seems low, but you know, that juice to the under is telling you something, because they haven't done anything in free agency. That's how this is being looked at when they've signed their guys back. And I'm always hesitant about coming back and playing defense the way they played last year, Stormy, especially down against good teams, which Gus Bradley has struggled to stop with a scheme.
They did, though, speaking of Anthony Richardson, they did get a solid backup in the comeback player of the year, Joe Flacco, who you referenced previously with the Browns. Let's go to the NFC here real quickly. The Bears, who have the top overall pick in this year's draft, likely to take Caleb Williams, also number 9 in the draft. They had a 7-win season, 5 of those wins coming in the last 8 games. Can they carry that over to get over 8.5 wins this season? That number too high, too low, just right?
I think it's just right, and you can see the under's juiced, right? I think getting
over
8 wins would be hard.
Over is juiced, actually, this time.
The over is juiced. I'm sorry. Yeah, the over. Thank you, Stormy. I think it's just right. I don't see them getting to 9, but could they get to 8? Yeah, I think that would be a good year. 8-9 would be a good year.
I'm 100% with you, especially with a rookie quarterback. How about this Los Angeles Rams team, who really recalibrated after the bye week? They snuck into the playoffs, won 7 of their last 8 games to finish 10-7 on the year. We talked about the lack of Aaron Donald on the back end. Now they do sign Trey White to that defense. Over under 8.5 wins. Thoughts on that number?
I think it's perfect. And I lean towards the under, even though there's no juice on either side.
Why is that?
Because I think, to me, losing Raheem Morris and losing Aaron Donald are really going to be costly losses. I think that's tough to overcome, especially Aaron Donald. And I think it's going to expose their defense a little bit more than it did. I think they covered up, and I think Morris did a really good job. And then you got to count on Stafford staying healthy. For them to get to 9 wins or 10 wins, Stafford's got to stay healthy.
Yeah, they do have
And can he do that? No, I think they've repaired their offensive line. There's no doubt.
Sure. I was just going to say, they do have a tough schedule as well. In addition to having the Super Bowl favorite in their division, they've got the Bills, Lions, Packers, and Eagles all out of division. On the bright side, 3 of those games are at home. One more here last minute, Michael. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers at 8.5. Too high, too low, or just right?
I think it's just right, right? And I mean, I know they're defending South champions, but the Falcons will be better. The Saints beat them handily, even though they were going to the playoffs. I think 8.5 is right. I lean towards the under. It's juiced, but I think 8.5 is the right number.
plus 125 for the Bucks to go over that 8.5 number. And as Michael referenced, minus 150 on the under in a very interesting division. The NFC South is the Falcons, of course, catapulting themselves to the top of that list with the addition of Kirk Cousins around all of that talent. But a very winnable division on the surface, it seems, should a team get hot. We are going to hit the break when we come back. Resetting with hour two of the Lombardi Line. Pro Day season rolls on. Jaden Daniels on the field today. Drake May, Michael Penix Jr. tomorrow. We'll discuss that as well as some rule changes in the National Football League. We'll be right back.